I'm going to be honest with you. People have been doing hard, challenging, stressful things for centuries, and they didn't deal with burnout the way modern humans do. There's a hidden factor that's fueling burnout at higher levels than ever, and it's not having too much to do. It's directly related with how we think about work and how we choose what our limits are. In this video, I'm going to tell you about the plan I made, what I learned, and some practical skills you can use to manage burnout at work. And I'll share three essential strategies I learned from the book Slow Productivity by Cal Newport. So, let's jump in. So, how did burnout become such a problem for so many people? It has to do with our shift from industrial labor to what Cal Newport calls knowledge work. So hunter-gatherers would have these moments of high intensity where they'd be hunting, and then these long moments of downtime. Now, farmers used to work seasonally. They would work really hard during the planting seasons and the harvest, but during the summer and in the winter, they would take breaks, they would rest, and they would hunt during the winter. This gave them space to rest and restore themselves. Then, when we switched to industry, factory pay was determined either by how many widgets a person produced or how many hours they worked. Seasons didn't affect the work anymore, so employees could show up from 9 to 5, 5 days a week, 50 weeks a year. There wasn't much room to breathe. Now, today, most of us are knowledge workers. We modern workers are engaged in education, healthcare, finance, running teams, parenting. And most of us produce output that can't be measured with grain in the silo or widgets in the shelves. So as we've moved from concrete productivity, employers and workers needed some way to estimate productivity. So we moved to measuring hours worked, which looks like office activity. How many meetings did you attend? How many emails did you answer? Is your computer mouse moving during the day? And now employees and bosses equate busyness with productivity. And this backfires badly, as the busier you are, the less creative you're able to be at work. The creative and caring part of you just dies a little bit. But that is not the secret fuel of burnout. It's this mindset, using stress levels as your boundary. So how will you know when you've worked enough? How will you know when you've done a good enough job as a teacher or a nurse or a parent or a business owner? How do you know when it's okay to say no to a new request, to add on a new project or another sport for your kid or another side hustler? Now, this is the key to understanding burnout. In the modern office context, they tend to rely on stress as the default heuristic. Knowledge workers feel vaguely overloaded all the time, and this is why we're so vulnerable to collapsing into full burnout when stressed by unexpected disruptions. It's like saying, how many sticks do I add to the fire? And then just saying, I'm just going to add so many sticks to this fire until I can't handle it anymore. That smothers the fire. You can't breathe anymore. How do I know when I've added enough to my plate? How do I know when I can say no to something? When I'm so anxious that I can't breathe anymore. In other words, it's only when we feel on the verge of overwhelm that we feel like it's safe to say no to something. And this guarantees that you're going to be permanently on the edge of tipping into burnout. The secret fuel of burnout is not having too much to do. It's that you use stressed out as your decision-making strategy. I'm going to just add more on until I can't handle it anymore. Now, it's true that many of us have bosses or clients making demands, but they don't always dictate the details of our daily schedules. It's often our own anxieties that play the role of the fiercest taskmaster. We suffer from overly ambitious timelines and poorly managed workloads due to a fundamental uneasiness with ever stepping back from the numbing exhaustion of jittery busyness. So for me, I always felt that pull of just, I should be doing more. I should be making more videos. I should be making better videos. I should be spending more time with my kids. I should be replying to more comments. I should be learning more therapy skills. I should be exercising more. I should be eating better. And the only limit to what I felt like I should be doing was my own physical and emotional energy levels. Using stress as your limiter guarantees that you will burn out. It's literally the underlying belief that primes you to burn out. Now, you can be just as productive, make just as much money, and help just as many people make even higher quality products without using the edge of stress as your deciding factor of when to say no. So let me share with you three strategies from Slow Productivity that have been really helpful for me to manage my workload without burning out. Number one, do less stuff. Now, doing less stuff doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be less productive. Some of the most productive people in the world had long periods of rest between working. Newport shares the example of Marie Curie, who in 1896 was furiously working in her lab, running experiments involving pitch blend. She was about to make a huge discovery that would lead to her being awarded 2 Nobel Prizes. And what did she do? She went on a 2-month vacation with her family. This is counterintuitive. Why would you leave your work? Wouldn't that make you step backwards? No, instead, clearing her mind prepared Marie and her husband to make the groundbreaking discovery of 2 radioactive elements. Now, the Curies were not the only ones. Copernicus, Galileo, Isaac Newton, George O'Keefe, and multitudes of other luminaries took long walks, laid under apple trees, and played music. Now, this approach is not only more sustainable and more humane, it's also arguably the better long-term strategy for producing results that matter in the 16th century. Galileo's professional life was more leisurely and less intense than the average 21st century knowledge worker. Yet, he still managed to change the course of human history. So here are some practical strategies to do less stuff. First, build some time into your calendar to monotask. This is time blocking. You schedule out your week into blocks of time where you're free to focus and do deep work. Now, for me, I'm going to show you my time blocking calendar. I use 2 Google calendars and I overlay the time blocking under my schedule. And you can see that I've reserved a time for emails, a time for phone calls, a day for filming, and a day to catch up on the details I may have missed during the week. Declare certain hours protected. So for example, no calls before noon, or all calls must be scheduled in my office hour blocks. There are 2 ways to force your calendar to have protected time. One is to reduce the number of appointments on your calendar. Cal uses a system that he calls one for you, one for me. Every time someone schedules a call or a meeting with him, he schedules 1 hour of deep work into his calendar. Then, if his week fills up, he still guarantees that he gets the time he needs to settle down and focus on his creative projects. Now, Cal Newport says to reduce your task list by 25 to 50%. And this is coming from a guy who has written a gazillion best-selling books while also teaching and hosting a podcast, but he takes off time regularly. So, taking some of the busyness out of your schedule can really help you reduce burnout. The way that Cal does this is by committing to only 2 or 3 active projects and then delegating, deleting, or putting on hold any tasks that aren't related to those projects. Now, you might be thinking, that's impossible at work. But I would argue that is probably your fears and anxiety speaking, because being burnt out isn't making you more productive. So it's anxiety, not reality, that keeps you feeling like you've always got to be busy. And anxiety is fueled by lack of clarity. Am I actually in danger of being fired? Am I actually in danger of failure? If you're not sure, what our fearful mind does is it just says, oh, let's just stay busy just in case. But being overwhelmed, having a lack of clarity about which tasks to work on, or simultaneously working on multiple tasks triggers the stress response in the nervous system. It's that nervous system load that causes burnout, not the actual tasks. Every project or task comes with an overhead tax of remembering all the details, plus emails, meetings, and other administrative tasks. And those overhead tasks will suck your energy. So you've got to build rest and recovery into your daily schedule. Instead of filling up your calendar and your workload to your absolute capacity, create some margins in your life. In her book, Burnout, Emily Nagoski said, we need 42% of our day to be in rest and recovery mode. So when you're time blocking the heck out of your calendar, on top of your 8 hours of sleep, be sure to give yourself about 2 hours of exercise, connection with a friend or loved one, mindful eating without a screen, play, daydreaming, or anything that recharges you. Rest is a biological requirement, and if you don't take it, Emily says, the 42% will take you through burnout or physical illness. If you struggle to de-stress, you could check out a free course I made called Grounding Skills for Anxiety. In 15 lessons, you'll learn how to let go of stress and soothe anxiety in your body. I'm going to make sure and put that link in the description. Okay, here's another really essential strategy to free up more space in your calendar. It's double your timelines on some projects. So are you guilty of shortening your time block so that you can fit more of them onto your calendar? Basically, that just adds stress and anxiety when you can't keep up with it all. Now, this might freak you out, but Cal recommends doubling your timelines on some projects. Humans are really bad at estimating how long cognitive tasks are gonna take. So whatever time you initially plan for a project, Cal says double it. Doing so will let you work at a natural pace rather than frantically rushing through your projects. Okay, here's the next one. Intentionally pull projects into your workflow. Now, instead of having a constantly overflowing to-do list that pushes you towards stress and burnout, choose to pull in a few creative ideas at a time. And this allows for a more thoughtful, high-quality work instead of pseudo-productive work that looks busy but isn't impactful. In the book, Newport references Toyota's famous pull system to demonstrate smarter approach to managing workflow. Toyota's pull system is based on actual demand. So instead of producing goods and then pushing them down the line, at each stage of a project, you pull what you need. Dealerships pull cars when they've sold cars. And as those cars sell, shipping moves more cars. Auto workers pull the task they need to work on instead of letting all of their needs pile up in their space. On a practical level, here's how I do it. I use a backlog list for all the things that I want to do, and then a weekly sprint list for all the things that I'm actively working on. When I've completed something in the sprint, I go to the backlog list and I pull in a new project. And this keeps me from seeing a huge pile of to-dos and getting overwhelmed. And I think this strategy is just so key. Cal says if you can implement it, you'll decrease your mental load by half because you just won't have a million things on your to-do list. Okay, so but what do you do if your boss keeps piling stuff onto you? There's a few powerful ways to slow them down. First is to ask for more details. He needs to do the legwork to let you know the scope and requirements of the project. Sometimes just asking your boss to write out a detailed plan of what he needs from you is enough for him to just say, oh, I don't have time for that. Let's put a pin in it. Second thing is explain your priorities. Let him know that for you to put this into your top three priorities, you'll need to deprioritize a different task. So you say something like, sure, boss, I could work on marketing copy, but I'm currently working on X number of projects. So which of these projects would you like me to move back into the holding tank? And then give him an estimate for how long the project would take. Either decline the project or cancel other stuff to make room. So as Newport says, you're dealing with the reality of your time, not with the gut feeling about how busy you're feeling at that moment. And this is just so important to managing burnout. You'll learn to develop a better ability to estimate how many commitments you can take at a time without overfilling your schedule. Okay, so that was our first big strategy to reduce burnout while also being more productive. Do less things. Okay, now let's talk about the second one. Remember those hunter-gatherers and farmers? They worked seasonally. Despite the invention of factories, we humans aren't optimally productive when working nonstop. Our minds and bodies are pretty good at managing short-term stressors, but pretty bad at handling chronic stress. So, to build up a healthier, more sustainable way to work, Newport recommends that we make space for slow times in work and give ourselves permission to work less. Now, sometimes this lengthens out timelines, but it gives you room for deep focus and higher quality work. Plan some slow seasons for your work. If you run your own business, like if you're a marketing person, maybe your slow season is after the big sales season is over. If you're an accountant, maybe it starts after April 14th. If you feel like this is impossible, that's probably your anxiety speaking. So ask yourself, is burning myself out actually making me more productive? Now, for example, Cal Newport tells us about a software company called Basecamp. They use a rhythm of 6 weeks of focused work followed by 2 weeks of downtime. So this 6-week cycle allows for deep focus on these important projects, and the 2 weeks of rest or lighter tasks help employees recharge before the next big push. And I really love this because this company chooses sanity over burnout, and I think we can build these systems into our lives. Now, it's true that many of us have bosses or clients making demands, but it is possible to quietly create seasonality in your work. So instead of immediately accepting new projects, you might say, oh, let's pick that up after the holidays. Or I'm currently busy, but I'm available for a new project in 3 weeks. Now, if you can't get away with longer slow periods, find short ways to implement small seasonality. So, for example, you might say no meeting Mondays or I answer emails at 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. And that just creates some breaks in your day without that frantic work. Now, let's be honest for a moment. If you are constantly lying to your boss, it's not going to benefit you or your mission or your burnout or your sustainability or the company in any way. So it might be helpful to have an honest conversation with your boss about the value of seasons in your work. When you both affirm that you want to make high quality work within a system that supports your productivity and sanity, it's easier to say not yet to new projects and to be intentional about when to start them. If we can move away from the mental block that says being busy is how I'm productive, this can change our work culture and free us up for some creativity. For me, one of the biggest sources of friction was trying to work, which I love, and spending time with my kids, who I love. I'd already set some clear boundaries for myself on how many hours I'd work each week, but fear was keeping me tied to publishing one YouTube video a week, which forced me to work through holidays and summers. Now, summer was the hardest. Like, trying to manage the kids while also trying to work made me pretty bad at both of those. So with permission from Cal, I started working seasonally. So when they're in school, I'm gonna work fast and focused. And when they're off for breaks, I'm not working, I'm with them. So last year, instead of dragging through the summer, I played with my kids, I hiked a bunch, I used my free time for other creative pursuits. And by the time the kids were back in school, I had a flood of good ideas for videos. And I just wasn't so burnt out. And I was more productive. So the other great thing is I got to spend more time with my kids and I got to spend more time hiking. So basically, win, win, win. Okay, so here's the third principle and the last one. We're almost done, guys. Obsess over quality. When we look carefully at what we're making, whether it's widgets or YouTube videos, building a higher quality product, something that you can be proud of, is worth more than making 10 low quality products. Take the time to do your research. Frantic work just isn't that good. Nobody really likes it. Oh, this poor marshmallow. Simplify your offerings. Get really clear on what you do and what you don't do. And for me, this means I'm not making videos about addiction recovery. For a plumber, maybe she's only going to do sinks. Or for a marketing consultant, maybe they only do mailers. Okay? Do less stuff, but make it high quality. This often produces better financial outcomes as well. Newport tells the story of a graphic designer who decided to take on 50% less work and charged slightly higher for that work. Now she works less hours, puts out a better product, can charge more, and she has more freedom in her schedule to travel. So she's actually working half as many hours, but making about 90% as much as she did before. Okay, so there you have it. You might be burnt out because you're anxious and unclear about what is and isn't on your plate. Get clarity about what you want to do, do less stuff, work seasonally, and obsess over quality. This book, Slow Productivity, really helped me reframe how I think about knowledge work and burnout. And I hope that's been really helpful for you. Let me know in the comments what you think and how you're doing with your burnout. Thank you so much for watching, and please take care. Hello, marshmallow.